Today is Tuesday, May 21st, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Jim Bertel, sitting in for Lori London. Coming up...
Well, the Interior Minister, Matteo Salvini, is very angry today. We've seen 47 migrants allowed to disembark. They were rescued by Sea-Watch, the NGO.
That's reporter Josephine McKenna. We'll have more on this story. Also ahead, Iran's foreign minister suggests that the U.S. President, Donald Trump, try respect instead of issuing threats, and we'll meet a man that changed the lives of 400 college graduates. It's all in today's International Edition. Iran says it has quadrupled its uranium enrichment capacity as the war of words between Tehran and Washington shows little sign of cooling off. Iran could soon exceed the amount of material it is allowed to stockpile under the nuclear deal. U.S. President Donald Trump pulled out of the nuclear agreement deal 1 year ago. He reimposed sanctions on Tehran and has threatened other sanctions on countries that still do business with Iran. Trump's decision has made the Iranian economy, already in tatters, even weaker. Trump's moves have helped set the stage for the current increased tensions between the United States and Iran. On Monday, he again warned Iran not to provoke the U.S.
If Iran wants to fight, that will be the official end of Iran. Never threaten the United States again. That's what President Trump tweeted after a rocket hit near the U.S. Embassy in Iraq yesterday, and before an interview was broadcast last night on Fox News Channel.
When I first came to office, one of the first meetings I had was at the Pentagon with generals, and they were showing me the Middle East. And they had 14 or 15 sites where there was nothing but war, problems. Every single one of those sites was instigated by Iran.
While no group has so far claimed responsibility for the rocket launch, Iranian officials say their country isn't looking for war. Matt Small, Washington.
And that's Associate Press Reporter Matt Small. The White House, acting on a legal opinion from the Justice Department, has instructed its former counsel not to testify before Congress. Lawyer Don McGahn faces a subpoena from the House Judiciary Committee and is scheduled to appear before lawmakers Tuesday morning. AP's Jackie Quinn has more.
The White House is citing a legal opinion just issued by the Justice Department that finds Don McGahn would have immunity from testifying before Congress as a former close presidential advisor. Democrats want to hear from McGahn, a key figure in the special counsel's Russia probe, who outlined to Robert Mueller the ways in which President Trump sought to curtail the investigation.
Among the top stories in the world, Indonesian President Joko Widodo has won last month's presidential election with 55.5% of the vote, the election committee said early Tuesday. The United Nations is expressing concern over the reported cutoff of water to the Libyan capital, Tripoli. A Guatemalan boy in U.S. Customs and Border Protection custody died Monday, a day after beginning treatment for the flu. The World Food Program is warning it may have to suspend the distribution of food in Houthi rebel-controlled areas of Yemen if the group does not stop obstructing its work. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the VOAnews.com website and on our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition.
This is Science in a Minute.
As a young child, you may have been ordered to eat your broccoli because it's good for you. Well, this sage advice is actually based in science. Past studies provided evidence that broccoli and other cruciferous vegetables like cabbage, cauliflower, and Brussels sprouts may play a role in inhibiting the growth of common forms of human cancer. A new study led by Dr. Pier Paolo Pandolfi at Boston's Beth Israel Deaconess Medical Center suggests that a gene called WWP1 produces an enzyme that interferes with the work of a powerful cancer-suppressing gene called PTEN. Working with mice, Dr. Pandolfi and his team found evidence that I3C, a compound found in cruciferous vegetables, can shut down the production of this enzyme that keeps PTEN from doing its job in fighting cancer. The study was published in the journal Science. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
And you're listening to VOA's International Edition. U.S. President Donald Trump has unveiled an immigration plan, but the plan likely will face too much political resistance to be implemented. His idea includes stopping the Diversity Immigrant Visa, also known as Green Card Lottery, drastically reducing the number of family sponsorship visas, and moving towards a merit-based system. Democrats have rejected the plan since it does not address the fate of the 700,000 Dreamers, individuals brought in the country illegally as children. White House correspondent Patsy Whitaker-Suara has the story.
30% of college-educated workers in science and engineering in the U.S. are foreign-born, according to the National Science Board. President Donald Trump wants more of these highly skilled immigrants.
A new legal immigration system that protects American wages, promotes American values, and attracts the best and brightest from all around the world.
The U.S. grants 1.1 million permanent legal residence visas, also known as green cards, each year. The majority are given to individuals with family ties to U.S. citizens, rather than based on skills or employment. Trump wants to cut the number of family-sponsored visas and increase those he calls merit-based. He wants to reduce humanitarian-based visas, such as for asylum seekers and refugees, by half, and stop the diversity visa program, the Green Card Lottery.
Random selection is contrary to American values.
Trump calls the new proposal the Build America Visa. It's determined by points, including age, English proficiency, education, offer of employment or promise of investment, and passing a test on American history and government. Democrats have rejected Trump's merit-based plan.
Are they saying family is without merit? Are they saying most of the people who have ever come to the United States in the history of our country are without merit because they don't have an engineering degree?
Also because it does not address DACA recipients, the 700,000 Dreamers, individuals who were brought to the U.S. illegally as children, and the millions of undocumented immigrants already here.
This is not something that has any path to becoming a law. And he kind of intimated that at the end of his speech when he said, you know, if this isn't enacted by Congress, then we'll enact it once we regain the presidency and the House. I think we already saw 2 years with this president and unified Republican Congress, and he still didn't get anything done on immigration. So I don't think that this proposal has any chance.
Nor does it address the shortage of workers for jobs that are not highly skilled.
The industries that are complaining about worker shortages are specifically looking for immigrants, whether it's construction or agriculture or meatpacking. There is a lot of demand in those particular areas, and a high-skilled immigration system, although important, wouldn't address our other needs, which is on the lower skill level.
Trump also still insists on a border wall and wants to create a trust fund from border crossing fees to help pay for it. Patsy Whitaker-Suara, VOA News at the White House.
While thousands of immigrants seeking asylum wait at the southern border, many are being apprehended across the border by American Border Patrol agents. In an initiative to decrease the flow, agents conducted an exercise to show the risks and dangers migrants face as they try to cross the border illegally. VOA's Celia Mendoza reports from Tucson, Arizona.
The number of people crossing the southern border of the United States keeps going up. In Tucson, Arizona, Customs and Border Protection says they detain more than 100,000 undocumented migrants who crossed the border illegally in March and April, including families.
It's very alarming to see groups of families crossing such dangerous areas.
Agents highlighted the problem for the media, enlisting actors to help recreate the dangers that undocumented migrants face when they cross the border with human smugglers.
Wearing camouflage sweatshirts, carpeted shoes to disguise their footprints, and carrying identical black containers of water, actors move through the desert, hiding and avoiding contact with law enforcement. Some end up hiding in the back of a semi-truck, where without air conditioning, temperatures can soar to 45 Celsius.
We want to send the message that migrating with children is very dangerous and we have to prevent it.
Border security officials say many are aware of the dangers but make the journey anyway, leaving behind countries steeped in poverty and violence. Franklin Garcia and his son left Honduras and made it across the U.S. border.
We entered through the Sonora border. Yes, we came alone. It was very difficult. Sometimes we were very hungry and we had no water.
Garcia and his son wait at the bus station to continue their trip through the United States. They are among thousands of migrants who cross the border illegally. Border agents say they are having a difficult time keeping up with the influx of undocumented individuals and their needs once they are detained.
At the very moment where it happens, we have no warning. It just happens to arrest a group of 400 individuals in the middle of the night. The agency has very little time to prepare. We have to mitigate that humanitarian crisis as quick as possible. But it's definitely a very difficult task because it requires a lot of resources. It takes resources away from other border security and law enforcement functions to mitigate these humanitarian crises.
Customs and Border Patrol agents at the Arizona border emphasize that crossing people at the southern U.S. border is a multi-million dollar business in which only coyotes and cartels benefit. Celia Mendoza, VOA News, Tucson, Arizona.
Elsewhere, Italy's Interior Minister, Matteo Salvini, is threatening possible legal action after 47 migrants rescued at sea by a humanitarian aid ship landed on a southern Italian island despite his explicit ban against them. The German aid group Sea-Watch said the 47 migrants were transferred to the island last night with the cooperation of the Coast Guard and Financial Police. They were among 65 migrants rescued off the coast of Libya last week. Salvini had given permission for 18 migrants, mostly families with young children, to be brought to land on Friday. Salvini reacted angrily to the transfer of the remaining 47, saying on Facebook that if there was a ploy to disembark the migrants, quote, I will take action, because that is aiding and abetting human trafficking. VOA's Kim Lewis spoke with Josephine McKenna for the latest developments.
Well, the Interior Minister, Matteo Salvini, is very angry today. We've seen 47 migrants allowed to disembark. They were rescued by Sea-Watch, the NGO, off the coast of Libya. They've been brought to the southern Italian port of Lampedusa off the coast of Sicily, and they have been allowed to disembark. The Interior Minister claimed to know nothing about it and said that was inappropriate. And as part of that, or as another aspect of this issue, now Sicilian investigators are looking into whether the captain, Arturo Centore, is really guilty of aiding illegal immigration. So once again, we're seeing this very hard line from the Italian government, determined to close the ports to migrants trying to cross the Mediterranean. And now we're seeing two different aspects here, the political aspect and a potential legal action from the judiciary.
In the meantime, where are the migrants right now?
So the migrants have been allowed to disembark in Lampedusa. The boat has been seized by Italian authorities. It's likely to be removed and taken to another port. But right now, the migrants who I understand come from Niger, Mali, South Sudan and Nigeria and other countries have been allowed to disembark and are being processed in Sicily.
He did allow the 18 migrants. And why not the rest of them, though?
Well, all of them now have been allowed to disembark, and I think that's why it's become such a huge issue, because they have been allowed to disembark. Basically, the Interior Minister is suggesting that he did not approve this, and he doesn't want to send a signal that this is acceptable. He's also been tweeting that this government, because of its hard line, has not only had a policy that's resulted in fewer arrivals, he's arguing that this Italian government, because of its hard line, has reduced the number of migrant deaths on the Mediterranean. I'm sure many people find that questionable. But the Italian government's also facing criticism today from the United Nations. Human rights experts from the UN have sent a letter to Italy because they're concerned now that the government is proposing a new security decree in the coming months that looks like proposing fines for NGO ships who are seeking to rescue migrants and refugees at sea.
Also, I understand the Vatican, as well as the Jewish community, is reacting as well.
Yes, at the weekend, the Interior Minister used religious symbols, including a crucifix, during his campaigning for the European elections. The Vatican is furious about this, and Italian bishops have also been expressing concern, and they don't want to see these elections politicized in a way that suggests that the church is allied with one political party over another. And it's also brought to the surface the very real differences between Pope Francis and the Catholic Church and this hardline right-wing government over the issue of migrants and the protection of migrants. As we know, Pope Francis feels very strongly that migrants and refugees should be respected and their human rights should be protected.
That was reporter Josephine McKenna in Rome speaking with VOA's Kim Lewis. In opening this year's World Health Assembly, the head of the World Health Organization stressed the importance of universal health coverage as an essential component in the quest for a healthier, safer, fairer world. Nearly 4,000 delegates from the WHO's 194 member states were on hand to hear the WHO chief outline the main health achievements of the past year and current and future challenges. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus campaigned vigorously for the adoption of universal health coverage in the run-up to last year's election for WHO Director General. Now, a year later, he tells delegates attending the World Health Assembly that great progress toward achieving national health systems has been made under his watch. He cites ambitious schemes which have been implemented or are in the process of being enacted in countries as diverse as Kenya, South Africa, the Philippines, Egypt, and El Salvador. But he notes universal health coverage is not possible without primary health care. He says primary health care is where the battle for human health is won or lost.
Strong primary health care is the front line in defending the right to health, including sexual and reproductive rights. It's through strong primary care that countries can prevent, detect, and treat non-communicable diseases. It's through strong primary health care that outbreaks can be detected and stopped before they become epidemics.
Over the past year, Tedros says significant progress has been made against many of the world's causes of death and disease. He says a historic milestone has been achieved with the rollout of the world's first malaria vaccine in Malawi and Ghana. He says a new initiative was launched to eliminate cervical cancer, which kills more than 300,000 women every year. He says battles have been won against a number of infectious and non-communicable diseases. At the same time, he notes many emergencies remain to be addressed. Among them, he says, is the fight to contain the deadly Ebola virus in conflict-ridden North Kivu and Ituri provinces in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo. He says the risk of Ebola spreading to other areas remains very high. This, even though better tools than ever, such as preventive vaccines, are available to fight this deadly disease.
But we're not just fighting a virus. We're fighting insecurity. We're fighting violence. We're fighting misinformation. We're fighting mistrust. And we're fighting the politicization of an outbreak.
Tedros notes Ebola treatment centers have been attacked by armed men, and a WHO doctor was killed in one of these attacks. Despite the many dangers, he says WHO and its staff remain undeterred and will continue their work until the job is finished. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You're listening to International Edition from VOA.
Hi, I'm Larry London, and I'm the host of Border Crossings, inviting you to join me for one of the best hours of request music possible on the radio. We've got all your favorite songs by your favorite singers. You tell us what to play. It's requests and dedications, and it happens every weekday right here on The Voice of America.
Hey, Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the Sunny Side of Sports Monday through Friday at 1630 and 1830 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports, or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/Sunny. It's the Sunny Side of Sports right here on the Voice of America.
This is VOA's International Edition. Recent moves by several U.S. states to impose strict new limits on abortion have encouraged abortion opponents that they might eventually be able to challenge a 1973 Supreme Court decision that established a constitutional right for women to seek an abortion. The effort has sparked a furious pushback from abortion rights supporters and could elevate the issue ahead of next year's U.S. presidential election, a reminder that abortion remains one of the most divisive and politically polarizing issues in American society. VOA national correspondent Jim Malone has more from Washington.
From Georgia to Missouri to Alabama, abortion opponents declared victory after passing bills that impose wide-ranging restrictions. In Alabama, lawmakers approved a near-total ban on abortion that does not include exceptions for women who become pregnant through rape or incest. In Missouri, legislators passed a bill that would ban abortions after 8 weeks of pregnancy, with support from Republicans like Nick Schroer.
Should it be killed merely because it'll be an inconvenience to its parents or unwanted? The simple answer is no.
Abortion rights supporters have been out in force in both Missouri and Alabama to protest the new restrictions, which Kristen Ford says threatens the fundamental rights of women.
Anti-choice activists and GOP politicians have made their aims clear for a long time, that they intend to gut and overturn Roe v. Wade, criminalize abortion, and punish women.
Roe versus Wade is the 1973 Supreme Court decision that established the constitutional right to an abortion. Abortion opponents now see their best opportunity in a generation for the Supreme Court to overturn that ruling, thanks to two conservative justices appointed by President Trump, Neil Gorsuch and Brett Kavanaugh. American University expert Jessica Waters.
We have seen the Supreme Court in the past has been much more willing to roll back Roe in more minimalist ways, not necessarily being willing to say we're going to flatly overturn Roe. But certainly challenges like this are an attempt to either chip away or completely overturn Roe.
The recent efforts by some states to restrict abortion is the latest chapter in a long-running political battle over the issue, says Stanford University analyst Morris Fiorina.
What you have is on the pro-life side, people simply wanting to prioritize the life of the unborn child above all else. On the pro-choice side, people who want to prioritize the rights of the mother above all else. And the vast bulk of the public in between says these are rights in conflict, and we need to have some sort of balance.
Some Democratic presidential contenders have seized on the issue, and it could become a factor in next year's election, especially for Democrats, says Jessica Waters.
If they think that Roe is indeed in danger, they're much more likely to get out and vote. So I actually think that this was a real mistake on the part of the more conservative Republicans to push something so extreme.
Abortion has long been one of the most divisive political issues in American society. Public opinion polls in recent years have shown that more than 60% of Americans support keeping the Roe decision in place, while about 30% want it overturned. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
The giant U.S. internet search engine Google says it is restricting China's Huawei from access to its Android operating system in compliance with the Trump administration's blacklisting of the world's second biggest smartphone maker as a national security threat. AP's Charles de Ledesma reports that Google says it is reviewing the implications of last week's order requiring export licenses for technology sales to Huawei.
Google says it's complying with all US government requirements and that services like Google Play and security for Google Play product will keep functioning on your existing Huawei device. But transfer of hardware, software or services to Huawei or technical interaction would be restricted by the American order that would strip Huawei phones of Google Maps and other services that require direct support.
That's AP's Charles de Ledesma reporting. The Chinese firm is at the center of ongoing trade disputes between Washington and Beijing. The U.S. contends that Huawei's technology could be used to spy on Americans, allegations Huawei has repeatedly denied. Scientists say they have new ways of tracking where clothing, medicines, and other items are made, making it harder for unscrupulous businesses to sell items that don't work or violate laws. The new tools are made possible by using machine learning to profile the unique DNA combinations of invisible microbes that vary from place to place. VOA's Elizabeth Lee reports.
Your clothes, your medicine, and other items all have genetic signatures because they each have been made in different places. And environments are filled with different microbes that make a unique combination of DNA profiles.
It is the collection of bacteria, fungi, viruses, protozoa that are present in any environment. The tiny organisms that we can't see that are everywhere on the planet.
Jessica Green is co-founder of Phylogen, a company that is building a microbial map of the world. It is collecting dust from different places and turning that dust, which contains microbes, into data using DNA sequencing technology.
Products pick up microbes not only from settling dust from the air, but also from touching surfaces in that environment and coming into contact with the workers.
One application is to fight a problem in the clothing industry.
So what we're hearing from brands is that up to a third of our retail goods are coming from unauthorized facilities.
According to Human Rights Watch, unauthorized subcontracting of facilities in the apparel industry occurs often. And it's in these places that some of the worst labor abuses happen. Phylogen is working in more than 40 countries and sampling the dust in hundreds of factories to create a database so the microbes on each product can be traced to all the places it's been.
So we're essentially digitizing the genome of places. We sample the DNA of the products, and then we use machine learning algorithms to map what is on the product with the factory and can therefore verify for brands that their goods are made by their trusted suppliers in factories where you have good labor conditions, good environmental conditions, versus unauthorized facilities, which can be really detrimental.
With a database of distinct microbial DNA, Green says it's possible to predict the outbreak of disease and even trace counterfeit pills.
We can sequence the DNA of seized counterfeit pills, cluster together pills that have similar microbial signatures, and then use that to help both pharmaceutical companies and the government, the U.S. government, gain some intelligence about how many different sources of these manufacturing facilities are there.
And ultimately, one day, trace them to their source as the database grows and provide more information about what you eat and drink. Elizabeth Lee, VOA News, Los Angeles.
Well, the nearly 400 graduating seniors of Morehouse College received an unexpectedly generous graduation gift Sunday. Billionaire technology investor and philanthropist Robert Smith, the keynote speaker at Sunday's ceremony, told the graduates that he was paying off the college loans. AP's Jackie Quinn has more.
Class of 2019, may the sun always shine upon you.
This sunny future, the gift of a lifetime for the class of 2019 at Morehouse College, comes courtesy of billionaire Robert F. Smith, the CEO of Visa Equity Partners.
My family is making a grant to eliminate their student loans.
For those 400 cheering, now debt-free graduates, it's an estimated $40 million, and all he asks is that they pay it forward.
We are enough. to take care of our own community.
Smith received an honorary doctorate from Morehouse, which is an all-male, historically black college located in Atlanta. I'm Jackie Quinn.
And you've been listening to International Edition. Thanks for joining us. And thanks to our team here in Washington, Director Tracy Carter, Engineer Jimmy Cook. I'm Jim Bertel. Thanks for listening.
This is VOA News.